Listen up. The views and opinions of this radio show and podcast are prepared and provided by Philip D. Blackman in his personal capacity. The opinions expressed in this show are my own, and they do not reflect the view of this radio station, broadcasting platform, or any organization Philip D. Blackman is a member of. The material and information presented in this broadcast is for general information purposes only. Any and all media presented are the property of their respective owners, and its use does not imply endorsement or opposition to any specific organization, product, or service. Let's get started.
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
It's Friday! Hey, hello, 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 ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of the Philip D. Blackman Show. I am your host, Philip D. Blackman, and welcome to the fastest hour in radio. All right, so once again, man, we're seeing politics as usual with a new political party now running the House of Representatives. That's called the Republicans. You know, the troubling aspect of all of this is from just one person, one commentator's opinion, because that's what I am. I'm a media commentator. I do some investigative work, but as a commentator, I'm a professional noticer. The troubling aspect that I'm learning with all of this stuff is the focus of these politicians. How it doesn't really align with the problems that we're facing as a nation. They're so busy doing their infighting that, again, once again, we're back left to our own. So on tonight's show, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to be discussing the increase in crime in the United States because there are reasons why it's happening. Because really, they've been spurred, you know, the criminal justice system, a lot of these blue cities and blue states, they've been spurred on by progressive liberal policies like bail reform and defunding the police. And I'm going to present you some examples later on. But later on in this show, we're going to be talking about how there were 25 police cadets who were mowed down by a driver in L.A. County while they were out for a formation that was out for a run. And last thing I'm going to cover tonight, friends, is the Republicans have announced a series of investigations into the Biden administration's family, or Biden administration and the family. A lot of people are spiking football. A lot of people are saying it's about time. I say it's politics as usual. Ladies and gentlemen, if you want to leave a comment or participate in the show, social media are great options, man. We're on Facebook, we're on YouTube, and we are on LinkedIn at The Philip D. Blackman Show, as well as Twitter and Twitch at The PDB Show. So, guys, thank you all so much for joining me. If you want to call or text, you have a comment, you want to participate in the show, the number on my screen, 409-245-9753. Again, for my listeners on the radio, that is 409-245-9753. So to all my listeners across the nation, around the globe, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Episode number 305, Politics and Crime. We're talking about MAGA, M-A-G-A, morons are governing America. God, we deserve better. All right, so I see in the comments, man, I see Rich, I see Laura, I see Tammy, I see a lot of you folks. Some of you haven't made yourselves known, but we're looking at all the social media platforms. We've got a pretty good-sized audience tonight. Guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you for being a part of this Friday episode. We're going to try to leave you with a little more knowledge than you started today. But before we get to the show, as always, friends, you know the deal. The opening segment of each show, we call it End of Watch, and this is our way of honoring the fallen men and women in the law enforcement community. My goodness, it is amazing the war and the assault we're seeing on our police agencies every day. And again, here just a couple of days ago was an assault on the police force. They were cadets. They wasn't full-fledged badge wearers, but, you know, we're seeing it, and it's going across the board, more and more attacks and more vilifying of our law enforcement individuals. You know, last year, because we were at the point of the pandemic where really I don't think anybody was sure what it was, and even if it is, because of the pandemic, we lost 651 officers in the line of duty. Now, we're talking pandemic, we're talking about assaults, we're talking about shootings and stabbings and the like, not just all COVID. But at the end of the day, we lost 651 officers who were performing their duty, who were exposed to hazards in the line of duty, and because of their selfless sacrifice, their ministry of making their communities better, we lost 651 of them. As of this show, we've lost 199. Now, if you want to know where I get those numbers, man, I tell everyone, go to the Officer Down Memorial page, ODMP, and that's where you'll find all the information you want. And if you ever go there, you'll see a quote that says, when a police officer is killed, it's not just an agency that loses an officer, it's an entire nation. And, man, we agree 100%. You know, we honor all of our officers who serve. And the purpose of this segment and this show is to highlight all of the officers who have given their lives and service their community and their country. We highlight a different officer every week, beginning with our Monday show. And this week, friends, we're going to wrap up our honoring of Niagara Falls, New York, Police Detective Christina Zell in this opening segment. End of watch.
The Philip D. Blackman Show proudly salutes Detective Christina Marie Zell, 47, of the Niagara Falls Police Department in New York, who died on November 7, 2022, from complications as a result of contracting COVID-19 in the line of duty. Detective Zell served her department with honor for 22 years in the Criminal Investigation Division. Her brother Jay said of his sister, "My sister has always been my hero. I always knew she was a badass, but the stories I've heard from friends and colleagues about the things she's done have just been incredible. She was always the first one to show up and do things for people. She's the most incredible person I've ever known." Detective Zell is survived by her parents and two brothers. On behalf of the Philip D. Blackman Show and a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Detective Zell. Niagara Falls, New York, Detective Christina Marie Zell. End of watch, November 7th, 2022. Rest in peace, ma'am.
When you have cable and your picture freezes, you get irritable. When you get irritable, your work suffers. When your work suffers, the wrong man is convicted. When the wrong man is convicted, he has time to think. When he has time to think, he thinks about you a lot. And when he thinks about you a lot, your house explodes. Don't have your house explode. Get rid of cable and upgrade to DirecTV. Call 1-800-DIRECTV.
All right, friends, again, welcome back. Friday episode number 305, Politics and Crime. MAGA, the morons are governing America. And here we go. Let's get it started. So, all right, guys. So, you know, are you noticing a trend? Are you seeing what's going on in our country? I mean, all you got to do really is just dig back not very far in your history to imagine the maniacs and the lunacy that was going on in our city streets. I mean, just this summer, motorists, I remember seeing a video out of L.A., of all places, surprise, surprise, where motorists took over of an intersection and they used their cars to form a pit. And the purpose was for drivers to start performing donuts in front of the large crowd and a growing crowd. And then, as harmless as it may have been, and again, we're not going to argue that was harmless, but the looting began, which really is just an extension of 2020, right? I mean, the surveillance video is very shocking. If you've never seen it, there was a mob of spectators who turned into looters, and they descended on nearby 7-Eleven. You know, dozens of people, you know, in the name of, I'm not real sure, Yeah, we heard in 2020 the protests were all about reparations. They were all about social injustice. They were all about George Floyd and protesting the police in these racist cities. But this started out as just them setting up, blocking off an intersection, and for some reason they decided to go in there and go from observers to a race to looters. I mean, dozens and dozens and dozens of people. They just ransacked the store. They sold snacks. They stole cigarettes, booze, lottery tickets, and not even bothering to hide their faces because they knew that police officers wouldn't show up in time. And even if they did, charges were not likely going to stick, not in LA County. So the question now becomes, is this, at what point are we calling it what it is? This is a mob mentality. This is crime. This is criminal behavior. Quit hanging all the, well, they're mostly innocent. Well, we don't care about the mostly innocent. We don't care about the mostly peaceful. We care about the people who are out there deliberately looting their streets, deliberately tearing up businesses in the name of whatever narrative that politicians and the media want to give them an excuse for. They want to give them a pass. Now, in that same aspect, I mean, we look at other investigations that have been happening in this country, you know, where the average in the riots of 2020, the average sentence that people received was about 15 months probation. And we're talking billions of dollars of destruction. But yet here we are looking at other investigations where trespassing is the crime and they get years in prison. Now, look, while this is just one incident, the sad reality is, beginning in 2020 and all the way up to today, this is a scene that would have unfolded in a number of Democrat-run cities along the West Coast that really reimagined, if you want your air quotes for the show, there you go, they reimagined their criminal justice system after George Floyd's death in 2020. You know, the reforms were championed by Black Lives Matter activists. Now, this may rub some people wrong, but when, you know, this whole idea of Black Lives Matter activists, look, man, I don't care how you want to put it, and I'm pretty sure I don't care who it upsets, but that BLM movement, man, that ain't nothing but the Klan with a tan. That's all it is. You know, they grew out of these progressive ideologies that views criminals somehow as victims. Victims of social justice, victims of justice systems that is steeped in white supremacy. That's the argument they would tell you. And the effects themselves have been disastrous, particularly on the West Coast, the model of this country where there's this culture of lawlessness has taken hold as police departments have really lost funding through the Defund the Police. L.A. Mayor Eric Garcetti, he followed through with his pledge to cut $150 million from the LAPD's budget. So violent crime, and especially murders, they naturally soared. And the department was short some 500 officers in 2021, with the city experiencing a recruiting crisis in 2022. Just right up the road, San Francisco, London Breed, she cut $120 million from the city's police department. And their homicides increased by 17% in 21 compared to 20. So rape, larceny, assault, motor vehicle theft, they're all up, according to San Francisco Police's crime dashboard. It is truly the worst possible time to have a staffing shortage. The department right now is down 300 officers. You know, traditionally safe cities, they've been hit the hardest in the Pacific Northwest. Homicide rates in and around the summer of love in Seattle, in Portland, right? They hit historic highs after their police departments were defunded and burned to the ground. The Seattle Police Department experienced a mass exodus, meaning there was a lot of people who left the city short just at least 500 officers that we know of. Right now, staffing is so low that detectives are pulled away from sexual assault cases so they can go back and work patrol. And this is all happening as precincts routinely fail to reach their staffing minimums because there is an assault on our police force. Portland right now is looking for at least 100 new officers after most of the veteran cops quit when the city turned their back on them. Portland Police Association Sergeant Aaron Chamanez, he blames in part the 180 sustained days of open riding in 2020 by Antifa and Black Lives Matter, which as a result, the social fabric in our country in that area specifically is worn very thin. Shootings and homicides, they've continued to increase across the nation. Social disorder is metastasized into a significant rise of all levels of crime that we're experiencing. Small businesses, they've been particularly impacted by long wait times for calls and a slow response from undersized police forces, if any response at all. So to tackle crime, you need to be proactive. And that's something, if you've ever taken a criminal justice course, you'll know it's called community policing. But the problem is, without necessary staff, officers that we have right now, they barely have time to respond to the backlog of 911 calls greeting them to start the very beginning of their shift. They come on duty running code. And one way to create better relationships with the community and the law enforcement is through community policing. Every study that I've ever read shows community policing is effective because it embeds the same exact officers in the same exact neighborhoods for a proactive patrol where they get out of their cars and they get to know the business owners. They get to know the residents, some of them by the first name basis. And we've seen a lot of videos out there that is showing that we have a lot of police officers who are engaging with their communities. But by and large, it's not happening. But departments don't have enough cops to follow that pattern. And yet, as it turns out, that a sustained two-year campaign of demonizing cops, it has hurt recruitment across the nation. But even if police departments were fully staffed, these progressive policies, they're getting in the way of keeping the peace. Democrats in Oregon, they passed legislation restricting law enforcement's use of tear gas and created prohibitions against added charges if someone's arrested for conduct in addition to interfering with an officer. In California, new legislation made it easier to revoke or suspend the certification for officers guilty of misconduct at a time when there's an anti-police sentiment that is very high. But none of the legislation went as far as what happened in Washington State, where the Democrat-controlled legislature passed sweeping bills that fundamentally changed policing, including one that is near a total ban on all vehicular pursuits. To pursue a criminal fleeing in a vehicle, up in Washington State, the police now need a probable cause, which is a higher bar than reasonable suspicion, that a violent crime has occurred. That's the only time they can chase them. Plus, they also need permission from a supervisor and a determination that not chasing the suspect is going to be more dangerous than letting them go. You know, the consequences of that bill was seen almost immediately. According to Northwest Public Broadcasting, they said that veteran troopers say that there's been a dramatic uptick in drivers fleeing traffic stops. Criminals, they adapted to the new policy with a surge of nonviolent, quickly executed crimes. Car theft, for one, 2021, after the law changed, rose 50%. Catalytic converters, the theft there went up an astonishing 10,000% over 2019 by mid-June. Smash and grab robberies, especially of pot shops and parking lots, they soared. But under the law, even if police witness a break-in, if the suspect drives away, the police are not allowed to pursue. Where is the criminal justice, right? Shelton County Sheriff Brian Burnett, he's a Washington State Criminal Justice Training Commissioner. He's been sounding the alarms for years over the law. He says, quote, law enforcement's inability to legally pursue violent and career criminals has emboldened individuals, empowering them to plan and put into play both property and person crimes, dramatically increasing crime rates in Washington State, which is also minimizing our quality of life. So Garnett, buddy, how you doing, my man? He says that all because of the Democrats in power, the country has gone to dog crap. They are the sole cause of the deterioration of this great country. And I'll tell you what, Garnett, I really believe that you don't hold the patent on that feeling, because I'm right there with you. One of the things we've got to take in control, we got to remember, is that we have just about every major city in America is run by Democrats. And again, that's kind of maybe that's the nature of the beast as far as, you know, city living versus country living. I don't know. But that's a great point. Kay Starkey, how you doing, my man? Welcome to the show, buddy. So look, even when police make arrests, progress has truly been stymied by partisan prosecutors who act more like defense attorneys. And if you want to know who we're talking about, all right, there's this man right here. Some of you may recognize him. He's a very special breed of individuals. He's the DA in LA County, and he's Gasson is his last name. And he actually said in a quote, he said that there's no debating the criminal justice system is plagued by racism. George Gascon. He says, quote, almost 30 of 30% of California's prison population is black, yet only 6% of California's total population is black. This did not happen by accident. Well, I mean, okay. So, again, what we're doing immediately is we're saying, hey, the criminal justice system is racist, so we probably shouldn't be pursuing these criminals, you know, or excuse me, these victims who are just caught on hard times. How else are they supposed to pay their bills, right? You've got to steal some shit. But, you know, there's other states across this nation has embraced this restorative justice program as an alternative to prison. Now, one program, King County in Seattle, it gives a pass to juveniles who are accused of certain felonies. So if a juvenile suspect steals a car, assaults a classmate, or even brings a gun to school, he's likely not going to see jail time. And when a group of mayors slammed this approach, which they blamed for the surge of crime, one prosecutor told them to get used to juveniles being treated this way. And the country soon is going to unveil virtually the same program for adult offenders, and we're seeing it already with the no bail policies. But meanwhile, the crime in these cities is unlivable. Much of it's driven by the intersection of homelessness and drug addiction. It's an abject failure. Under pressure from activists who complain that virtually any enforcement is criminalizing poverty, many Democrat leaders have taken this hands-off approach to the homeless who are criminals, who are addicts. L.A. County, getting back to them. Right now, they are the home of over 66,000 homeless residents, which is a lot larger than most cities across this nation. And it's by far the largest on the West Coast, the second highest in the country, behind only New York City. Sacramento and San Francisco, they have nearly 10,000 homeless residents, while Seattle area has reached about 13,000, and Portland has about 6,600. These Democratic mayors and these activists, you know, they say that high-priced housing, that's what's responsible for the rise in homelessness. No. You know, and their goal, I think, is really to create a more subsidized and low-income housing instead of addressing the addiction, instead of addressing the mental health issues, which are truly at the root of a lot of homeless cases. And then we got this drug crisis right now that's fueling the surge of homelessness, and Democrats have made it worse by effectively legalizing drugs. Oregon, for example, you may have remembered this back. They passed Measure 110 in 2020 at the height of all things bad. The law made the possession of hard drugs like cocaine and fentanyl and heroin punishable by a civil citation, encouraging, mind you, the addict to call a hotline for addiction resources and here's your $100 fine. You know, this is what's so troubling, right? This is a measure that's meant to fund drug addiction treatment. Well, it's not working. It's been an abject failure. Out of roughly 2,000 drug citations handed out during the first year of implementation, only 19 out of 2,000 requested drug treatment resources via the hotline. So the idea is, hey, if we don't, and I heard this, I had a guy on my show. Y'all might remember him, Roddy was his name. He came on my show and he's talking about, well, we need to decriminalize drugs because if you do that, then drug crimes are going to go down. Well, no shit. If you take the crime off the books, then you don't have a crime. But that's not how it truly works in a civilized society. Nearly half of those people, of those 2,000 who received citations, they never showed up in court. Who's surprised? And rather than treating their addiction, the state actually enabled it. Only 0.85% of the 16,000 addicts who sought resources went into drug rehab. A lot of the others were given clean needles and to continue to their nasty-ass habit and overdose treatments. Stoney Carter says, Philip, you've been doing such a great job, sir. Thank you so much. Welcome to the show, my man. You know, these West Coast Democrats, they embrace a harm reduction model. Again, it's criminal justice 101. I mean, and it's a strategy that they say effectively meets addicts where they are, and it offers them a safer alternative to continue their habit rather than pushing them toward detox. So the idea, again, is not to treat the illness, but to treat the symptoms. In Washington, public health in Seattle, King County, they operate a mobile van and they hand out clean needles even to minors. They don't care. In California, Democrats, they recently passed legislation to allow cities to operate safe consumption sites, safe zones for drug addicts. It was too extreme of an idea for even Governor Gavin Newsom, who is way out on the left. He vetoed the bill, but it didn't end the fight. San Francisco City Attorney David Chu reported he agreed to back a nonprofit that plans to operate a site despite the veto. He's going to do it anyway. Again, so here we are. What is the point of having governors? What's the point of having mayors? What's the point of having representatives of your state if people are just going to do what they want to anyway? I mean, providing addicts a space to shoot up or smoke fentanyl while refusing to enforce basic laws, it's only abled the drug problems that we're having in this country. And consequently, these homeless addicts, they turn to crimes like theft to pay for their drug of choice. It's not rocket science. Residents, as of right now, it seems like they're becoming more and more fed up, which is why we've seen this massive exodus from many of the blue states and the cities to more rural areas and deliberate states and communities who don't have this soft on crime stance. This is where they're going. There seems to be a shift back to reasonable policies, as we're starting to see a little bit. They're starting to go back to refunding the police again, where criminals are charged for their crimes and police departments are again funded. But it's slow going. They took the money away overnight, but they're having a hard time putting it back in. Crime is still rising, and homelessness shows no sign of improvement across the West Coast. As of right now, the Democrats still hold all the power. The Republicans, yes, they're projected to take the House in the new year, but hasn't happened yet. And they're not yet governing as if their power is threatened by any voters, because if anything of this midterm election should have showed you, the voters aren't paying attention. And that's only going to change when these Democrat-run cities, when they hit rock bottom. But again, the federal government will bail them out. You know, many residents, they're not going to wait around to see what that looks like, and good luck getting them to come back to your state. But as an example of what, you know, as an example of rock bottom, I want to, before I jump into this next segment, I want to take a quick break, but I want to talk about what happened this week in LA after this commercial break and end our segment, the breakdown. Guys, stick around.
Huh. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Everybody knows that.
Well, did you know that game show hosts should only host game shows?
Samantha, do you take Kevin as your lawfully wedded husband?
Or would you rather have a new car?
Say hello to the season's hottest convertible. Oh, and say goodbye to Samantha.
Geico. 15 minutes could save you 15% or more.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius. Today we salute you, Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Mr. Giant Taco Salad Inventor.
Ground beef, refried beef.
All right, guys, we're back. We're, you know, technology is so awesome, man, especially when it screws up mid-show. But hey, that's all right. We make it work. All right, guys, so look. In L.A. County, just the other day, there's a tragedy that needs to be covered, and I want to cover it in this segment, The Breakdown. All right, so a 22-year-old diamond bar man, he's been arrested on suspicion of attempted murder of peace officers. At the LA County Sheriff's, the Sheriff's Office said that he deliberately ran into some recruits who were out on a training run this past Wednesday. It injured 25 of them. Now, investigators have developed probable cause to believe that it was intentional, and that comes from Alex Villanueva. He's the sheriff. He's the sheriff in LA County. He said, quote, they went through an exhaustive interview process with everyone involved in the video surveillance and the statements from the recruits. The physical evidence they have and what they've got from the suspect himself, and they were able to form the opinion it was a deliberate act. Nicholas Joseph Gutierrez, that's him on the left of the screen right there. That is his vehicle. And I want to blow this up because this is important. I want you to look at the front of that vehicle. That vehicle is destroyed. And I want you to really wrap your mind around the idea that the human bodies is what destroyed this vehicle as bad as it did. He was arrested Wednesday, hours after that early morning crash, and authorities said that his bail was set at about $2 million. 25 sheriff's recruits were injured in the crash. Now, the sheriff told the New York Times on Thursday morning that while he intentionally described the crash as a horrible accident, That statement was based on preliminary information, and the further investigation led to probable cause to arrest Gutierrez. Now, his family could not be reached for comment, and I can't imagine that they would ever want to be, but I want to show this to you. This is the video right here. I'm going to try to blow it up for you so you can see it. We're going to start it over. All right, so you can see right here on the left. Now, the video actually stops right before it makes contact, because, you know, it's just not something I want to show on this show. Yeah, they were running in four columns, you know, like a regular old military formation. They had drill instructors who were beside them and two black and white radio cars right behind them when this Honda CRV, when it drove into the group at about 6:30 in the morning. You know, as the group ran north on Mills Avenue, the vehicle approached, according to reports, 30 to 40 miles per hour, running headlong in, according to the witnesses. It veered into the wrong side of the road, and it plowed into these recruits. Now, the runners at the front of the formation, they were able to get out of the way before that SUV struck others and crashed into a light pole. Now, Villanueva said in an interview or in his news conference that there were zero skid marks at the scene, which means there was no attempt to slow down. And the driver remained in the vehicle after the crash, and those at the scene, they say, struggled to get him out initially. I think they struggled to put their hands on him, if I had to guess. But he says, quote, "From what I understand, he was in the vehicle with his foot still on the accelerator." Are you kidding me? He was still in the vehicle, hit a light pole, his foot was still on the accelerator. They got him in the vehicle, driving the vehicle, right there on the scene. Now, video shot by a man who lives across the street from the crash site showed recruits desperately trying to help those who appeared to be most seriously injured. And by all reports, the area looked like an airplane wreck with debris and trash and bodies everywhere. He goes on to say that there's so many bodies scattered everywhere in different states of injury that is pretty traumatic for all the individuals involved. He said he called the injuries, which included head trauma and lost limbs, very life-altering for a lot of these recruits. You know, five recruits were in critical condition after the crash, and more than a dozen others, they suffered minor to moderate injuries. Now, Sheriff Villanueva said that seven recruits were still in the hospital Thursday night. Five were in observation. Two remain in critical condition. One of them underwent surgery for extensive fractures to his legs. Now, the biggest concern is recruit Alejandro Martinez, who Villanueva said had surgery Wednesday night and had major trauma to his head and multiple fractures. L.A. County Fire Captain Marcos Espiritu, he was right across the street working an overnight shift when he heard the familiar sounds of dozens of recruits jogging past just before sunrise. But then he heard the crash, followed by screaming. Now, there was a deputy recruit who was banging on the station door and pleaded for help. And, of course, the fireman, he and other firefighters, they rushed just a few hundred feet to the crash site, and there was just total chaos. At the time, recruits were tending to injured classmates when other firefighters arrived to help. Now, he reported that he saw mangled legs, exposed bones, including one deputy recruit who with severe head injuries. Minor injuries include abrasions to recruits' arms, legs, backs. He's been with the county fire department for 36 years. He said he'd never seen something of that magnitude, which is saying a lot, especially in L.A. County. But he added that how traffic has always been known to move fast on that road with cars flying up and down. Now, Gutierrez, he was detained at the scene by other cadets. He sustained minor injuries, as you can see on his face, and he was treated at the hospital. He was arrested Wednesday afternoon, and a breathalyzer test was done, which means he blew 0.0 on his breathalyzer. But authorities, they're working to determine whether he was under the influence of any other controlled substance at the time of the crash. Again, that's going to be something that's going to take time to get out. But a law enforcement source familiar with the investigation said that marijuana was recovered from the driver's vehicle. And I'm not going to say that marijuana was the cause, because I don't believe in that kind of fear-mongering, but I do believe that, you know, there is a possibility this man was under the influence. Now, news videos showed that the authorities, they searched his family's home on Wednesday night, and they banged on the door at the house in Diamond Bar. You know, the SWAT team showed up, and, you know, they did their job. They made entry early after escorting two women outside, and the video showed authorities, they spent some time inside, but they didn't appear to remove anything visible from the home. So all these recruits, they were members of the STARS Center Academy in South Whiter. Now, the deputy recruits participated in a 22-week program. They complete extensive training on firearms, law, police procedures, self-defense, law enforcement, driving, physical fitness, and force de-escalation. And this class, 464, was in its eighth week. But sad to report, ladies and gentlemen, that the story doesn't end there. Because remember, I said this is L.A. County. And for those of you who know about L.A. County, you may have an idea of where I'm going. L.A. County is, again, home to the progressive district attorney, George Gascon, whose policies, these woke policies that allows violent criminals to remain free, he has been blamed for the rising cost of crime in the city of Angels and neighboring areas. But he's also the DA who survived a recall election by invalidating about 200,000 of the signatures on a petition that called for his resignation or recall. But by invalidating those signatures, it allowed him to be below the required threshold to be able to move forward with the process. You know, this latest move, it set my skin on fire because it's tragic. Apparently, at 9:49 last night, Thursday night, the L.A. County Sheriff's Department released Gutierrez from custody. I want to say that again in case you didn't hear the news. A 22-year-old man, Nicholas Joseph Gutierrez, suspected of deliberately driving his SUV into a group of police cadets, has been released from custody after being arrested on suspicion of an attempted murder of peace officers. Can you imagine? What world are we in? The investigators, in their news statement, they said that, quote, due to extreme complexity of the investigation, which includes ongoing interviews, video surveillance review, and additional evidence needed to be analyzed, homicide investigators have released Gutierrez from the sheriff's department. Now, as it stands right now, as the rule lays out, the sheriff's department, they must formally present a case to the DA within 48 hours of an arrest. And investigators were not ready to do that to Gutierrez at the time. Now, LA sheriff spokesman did say that authorities do plan to re-arrest Gutierrez and present the case to the DA's office once the case develops further. She said that, quote, the evidence is there. We just want to make sure this is properly presented. Again, the evidence is there. But you're releasing the guy who just tried to kill innocent people who were out for a run. The fact that they're sheriff deputies, the fact that they're police recruits doesn't matter. I mean, it does, but it doesn't, because these are people out for a jog, and they get plowed into by this guy. You know, the sheriff actually said that they went through an exhaustive interview process with everyone involved, the video surveillance, the statement from the recruits, the physical evidence they have and what they got from the suspect himself, and they were able to form the opinion it was a deliberate act. However, he says, quote, we operate under prosecutor George Gascon. We are actually going to provisionally release him until we have the case ironclad, ironproof, and submitted to the DA for filing consideration. The sheriff even said that the recruits were hospitalized late Thursday, including two who remained in critical condition. One underwent surgery for a severe leg, the other one for his head. Now look, whether this is ruled an accident or not, or even intentional, all reports suggest that this was intentional. At the end of the day, a crime was committed and people are injured, some severe. How in the world can any jurisdiction anywhere on the planet look at this case and believe that releasing a guy from custody is the right thing to do? That's absolutely baffling to me. Yeah, I'm all for that constitutional protection that we're innocent until proven guilty, but when a driver is pulled from the vehicle that committed the crime at the scene, witness statements and videos support the accusation this man was guilty of driving into these people, these cadets. And there's no dispute that he was the operator of the vehicle that injured 25 people, police cadets or not. The fact is, this is another case of our criminal justice system still being broken, and the progressive policies of places like L.A. County, they are a reflection that we are no closer to holding criminals accountable. Instead, we're making victims out of criminals and criminals out of victims, and that's the breakdown. So I want to hit some of these comments here. Laura Harlow in the chat, she says, that's effed up. Richard LaMonica says, I spit my drink when I read that he was released this morning. Amen. I had a few choice words myself, Rich. Tammy says that they'll never see that MF-er certainly again. Job well done. Casey Starkey says he is gone. Laura Harlow says Darnell Brooks wouldn't have been able to run, wouldn't have been able to run over the Christmas parade last year if they kept his mangy ass in jail. This is just disgusting. And you know, here we are. Darnell Brooks just got what, 6 life sentences? I mean, it was, he got a hell of a punishment. And for that to happen, and then this right here, truly, I don't look at it really as any different. Again, police cadets are not out for a run. These people, they had a right to be on that road. They had a right to be doing what they're doing and to be plowed into. And the fact that they just, we got to release him because we want to make sure our case is ironclad, because they know that George Gascon is going to do everything he can to make a victim out of this guy because his last name, Gutierrez. I guess that might be some of that Sanctuary City stuff. I'm not real sure. But Laura Harlow talking about Darnell Brooks, he got 1,000 years, amen, and how arrogant he was. But ladies and gentlemen, we're going to take a quick break, and I'll be back with you right here on the other side as we talk about the latest development up in the swamp in Capitol Hill. Nancy Pelosi stepping down and the Republicans claiming they're getting to work. Stick around.
A well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. This is the Second Amendment of the United States of America's Constitution. This Second Amendment, the right of law-abiding Americans to privately own and possess firearms, is under attack like no other time in America's history. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris have pledged to take away your Second Amendment rights through gun bans, gun confiscations, and government regulations, even a gun tax. Do not take this lying down. The time to take action and fight to protect your Second Amendment rights is now. Join the Second Amendment Foundation, the oldest and largest nonprofit foundation focused on protecting your Second Amendment rights. For more information, to join, or to donate, visit saf.org.
Hello, ladies. Look at your man. Now back to me. Now back at your man. Now back to me. Sadly, he isn't me. But if he stopped using lady-scented body wash and switched to Old Spice, he could smell like he's me. Look down. Back up. Where are you? You're on a boat with the man your man could smell like. What's in your hand? Back at me. I have it. It's an oyster with 2 tickets to that thing you love. Look again. The tickets are now diamonds. Anything is possible when your man smells like Old Spice and not a lady. I'm on a horse.
All right, guys. Welcome back again. Episode number 305. Politics and Crime MAGA. Now we're moving into the next portion of our show. Morons are governing America. Here we go. So, friends, 409-245-9753 if you want to weigh in or continue to write in on the chat. Guys, I appreciate your support. I appreciate you being here joining me this Friday evening as we talk about the next big development, because there's so much news that's coming out here lately. It's hard to keep up by only doing 3 shows a week, but so I pick out the ones that I think are newsworthy. Well, this one here, so after being the Democratic leader for about 20 years, Nancy Polygrip Pelosi, she stepped down and she's announced that she's not going to be seeking another leadership position for the 118th Congress in the aftermath of the red trickle that was disguised as the red wave. She said that she's not going to seek re-election Democratic leadership for the next Congress. Quote, "For me, the hour's come for a new generation to lead Democrat caucus that I so deeply respect, and I'm so grateful that so many are ready and willing to shoulder this awesome responsibility." Now, look, I'm gonna cover 2 different parts in this. So, one, she's stepping down, which I guess is big news, but this is kind of what I've been calling for, you know, in these past few shows. We need these political leaders, if you will, if you want to give them a word. They all need to step down. They all need to go away, and because old ideas are old ideas. They're not working, and that's why they haven't been working, because we have these geriatrics who've made an entire career out of being politicians. They are bringing in some archaic thought processes, and they're trying to put them in today's modern-day society, and it's toxic. It's disgusting. Not only does Nancy Pelosi need to go, but McCarthy needs to go, Schumer needs to go, and Mitch McConnell need to go. But Nancy, 82 years old, stated that as reports swirled around that she was paving the way behind for one Hakeem Jeffries to be her successor. Now, if you're watching the news, you know Hakeem Jeffries is the big name that's going right now. And you think about it, man. Every time the media or anyone else puts their feather in the cap of somebody, oh, this is our next presidential candidate. What's the creepy porn lawyer? What's it? What the hell's his name? The one who was looking out for the stripper with Donald Trump. You know, he was the darling of the media back then, and they put all their stock behind him. Turned out he's in trouble for embezzling money. Beto O'Rourke, same thing. Just a slime ball. Andrew Cuomo, same thing. Yeah, Avenatti, that's his name. Thank you, Laura. It's unbelievable. But see, Hakeem Jeffries is completely different in a way. You know, he's a self-described far-left Democrat who appears to be angling right now. He's made his intentions very known. He wants the Democratic leadership position. Now, he's been in Congress since 2013, and he's being portrayed by some in the media, again, as, quote, a capable operator inside the conference with sharp media skills and to sell a Democrat message to the public. Now, the suggestion is he's probably going to get some pushback from the squad because, you know, they call him too much of a centrist. But what you don't hear much about from the fawning press when it comes to Jeffries is the historic nature of his presumptive upcoming role as House Minority Leader. He is, by the Democrats' very own convenient definition, he is a threat to democracy. That is what the Democrats say, and I'm going to prove it. Hakeem Jeffries, he has repeatedly spread that disinformation in the past. All this stuff that you hear about these MAGA Republicans, right? That they're they're a threat to democracy. Well, hold on to yourself. Get ready for your shocked look, because Hakeem Jeffries is just as guilty of spreading that disinformation in the past. Everything from the 2016 election to when Kyle Rittenhouse shot rioters in self-defense. Hakeem Jeffries' presumable succession is notable because Democrats and the liberal establishment, they've continuously labeled some Republican politicians as election deniers. And the same standard, though, doesn't appear to be applied to Jeffries. He's an election denier who routinely tried to delegitimize and undermine our, quote, sacred institutions. All right, well, and the Democrats have often referred to the courts and the democratic process. So here's what we're talking about. In November 24th of 2020, here's a tweet from him that says, "Keep pouting. History will never accept you as a legitimate president." August the 8th, 2020, he said, "Let's be clear, Donald. The only person trying to steal the election is you and your buddies at the Kremlin." He goes on in another post, he says, quote, "The more we learn about the 2016 election, the more illegitimate it becomes. America deserves to know whether we have a fake president in the Oval Office, hashtag Russian interference." Well, again, all of this stuff, these past three tweets that I've just shown you, they have been debunked by another media darling, Robert Mueller. He was leading the investigation into Trump-Russia collusion, and there was no collusion there. It turned out, actually, that the report was based on a fake dossier, but we're not going to litigate that. But right here, he says in September the 28th of 2018, he says, "Lie more than any administration in the history of the Republic. Cheat. 2016 Russian election interference. Steal one or two Supreme Court seats. When will Republicans put the country ahead of party? Hashtag clean up corruption." September 14, 21, he says, quote, "Republicans have hijacked the judiciary by stealing two Supreme Courts. And now they want us to respect an illegitimate decision from these people. Get lost." Well, wait a minute. There was no stealing of seats. There was a confirmation process. It had to go through the steps. There was nothing shady about it. They just hated the fact that they didn't get to put their people in. February 8th of 22, he says, quote, "The Supreme Court majority has zero legitimacy. Ghosts," he writes, "of the Confederacy are alive and well." And the last little tweet that I'm going to show you here come from December 6th of 2018. He says, quote, "Is the North Carolina congressional seat the only one stolen by rogue Republican operatives? We may need a comprehensive criminal investigation to figure that out. Hashtag clean up corruption." So again, all of these things that we've been hearing for a really long time that is hazardous to the democratic process, now everyone is saying that this guy who has a history of denying elections, who has a history of causing American people to question the election integrity, these people, he is going to be the one that they want to put in the White House or in as a speaker, and maybe even as a presumptive White House nominee. Who knows? But I'm just wondering, where in the hell, where's their mind? I mean, hypocrisy is amazing. And just when we think that we've been lectured all of this time about how such talk as we just saw with Hakeem Jeffries was dangerous, who knew? You know, the Bronx and Queens representative, he called then President Trump a burglar. He alluded to the Ku Klux Klan and calling them the Grand Wizard during a Martin Luther King Jr. event in 2019. And he later defended his comments and he said that Trump's not a racist, but he's a racial arsonist, whatever that means. Hakeem Jeffries has previously accused Republicans of preventing the rich from paying their fair share just months after he threatened to oppose any spending bill that didn't include $500 billion tax cut for the wealthy. Make up your mind, Jeffries. I mean, if he becomes the leader of the Democrats in the House, he'd likely be pitted against Kevin McCarthy as the House Speaker. And what that means is we got the same animal with a different gender identity and a different skin tone that's going to be leading the charge. In essence, this is a snafu. Systems normal all effed up. This is a snafu of our political spectrum. Nothing is going to change with the next two parties on the opposite sides of the aisle arguing with the same point with different viewpoints. I could be wrong, but I believe history has a funny way of reminding people that we don't really learn anything from history, do we? And then in another, I hate the breaking news, but Republicans have now come out. Now that they are suggested that they're going to take the House, didn't take them very long to come out and take and say that after the midterms that the majority is going to. They've announced their plans starting this new Congress of 23, the 118th, and one of their first priorities in shining a light on and digging into is Biden family's business deals. Now, look, we've all been asking these questions, and rightfully so. These questions deserve answers. But speaking at a news press conference on yesterday morning, flanked by his Republican colleagues, GOP Rep. James Comer, he's the next in line to the House Oversight Committee. He explained that the evidence the Republicans have gathered so far, to which base their probes, include interviews with multiple whistleblowers reviewing the contents of Hunter Biden's laptop from hell, and documents of previously unknown transactions. So again, you know, we heard all during the Trump administration when they would come out with their confidential informants and their whistleblowers and everything else, man, a lot of Republican voters, they thumbed their nose at the Democratic Party for doing the exact same thing that the House Republican Committee is trying to do right now, which it should be alarming to, you know, I mean, again, nothing's changed. Systems normal all left up. But here it is. They're doing the same thing. During that press conference, Comer said that Biden will be investigated for multiple violations, including these. Conspiracy of defrauding the United States, wire fraud, conspiracy to commit wire fraud, violation of the Foreign Agents Registration Act, violations of the Foreign Corrupt Practices Act, violations of the Victims of Trafficking and Violence Protection Act of 2000, tax evasion, money laundering, and conspiracy to commit money laundering. Now, Comer said that they found the evidence that Biden and his son were involved in these crimes. But I'm just wondering, what does anybody expect is going to happen? Comer questioned, he said, was Joe Biden directly involved with Hunter Biden's business dealings and is he compromised? That's our investigation. He said that he hopes the investigation is going to finally bring down President Joe Biden and the wide range of criminality from human trafficking to potential violations of the Constitution dealings they have committed. That is his quote. He wants to bring down Biden. Well, is that not the same thing that we got sick and tired of being sick and tired of from 2016 to 2020? I mean, truly, do you really? How can anyone argue that Joe Biden is going to be taken down by this? If you think Hunter Biden is, you're absolutely mental. And again, 409-245-9753, I would love to see the conversation. He said that in the 118th Congress, this committee is going to evaluate the status of Biden's relationship with his family's foreign partners and whether he's a president who's compromised or swayed by foreign dollars or influence. He said that this is an investigation of Joe Biden, the president of the United States, and why he lied to the American people about his knowledge and participation in his family's international business dealing schemes. Now, again, to that point, Joe Biden did come out and say that, no, I have never discussed my business dealings with my son, but yet there's pictures everywhere, all over the internet of Hunter Biden and Joe Biden and different leaders from different countries playing golf. I mean, so it is there. It does exist. But again, what's going to happen? He added that Joe Biden's crimes have been long ignored and that the Oversight Committee has lost credibility and he's going to be the one to bring it back because he blames Adam Schiff for not taking care of business across the board, for not being equal. But meanwhile, the White House, they've denied multiple times that Joe had been involved in his son's dealings. However, 17 pieces of evidence have proven otherwise. Again, you can have all the evidence. You know what it is. You know what time it is. But do you really think anything's going to happen? Because in response, the White House called out the Republicans for investigating this so-called, quote, long debunked conspiracy theories. The White House released a statement saying that instead of working with President Joe Biden to address issues important to the American people like lower cost and congressional Republicans, top priority is to go after President Biden with politically motivated attacks chock full of long debunked conspiracy theories. Now, ladies and gentlemen, they go on to say that President Biden is not going to let these political attacks distract him from focusing on American priorities, and we hope congressional Republicans will join us in tackling them instead of wasting time and resources for political revenge. Do you remember on my show a lot where I used to tell you that the pendulum will always swing the other way? Right, you know, that from 2018 to 2022, the pendulum was on the left. It was on the side of power. The Democrats had it, and they were doing everything they can to do whatever they wanted to because who's going to stop them, right? And I argue that you people who are championing this idea about these investigations into Donald Trump, investigations into getting him impeached, I told you then, the pendulum is going to swing because if the Republicans take the party back, they are going to do the same thing to Biden that the Democrats did to Trump. And the complaints are going to be the same, and we see it. But let's review what we already know and we've already documented about Hunter Biden. During Joe's vice presidency, Hunter Biden was openly trading on the Biden family name. And as an international business consultant, he charged clients six and sometimes seven-figure fees for what appears to have been a little more than a beltway access to high-powered introductions because he was not qualified for the jobs that he was hired for. Getting paid very, very ludicrous. For what? He had no experience. It was really just a kind of a title anyway. I'd almost be willing to bet my house that he didn't attend a single meeting. It was just a way for them to pay him lots of money and give him a title where he didn't have to do anything. Who would not want that job, right? But one prospective partner reported that despite the reports of Hunter's womanizing and substance abuse, he could still be a valuable partner due to his purported access to the state and treasury departments as well as the highest levels in China. In 2013, Hunter accompanied his father on an official visit to Beijing where Joe Biden shook hands with Jonathan Lee, who is a Chinese venture capitalist. And Lee already contracted Hunter and his partners to start a private equity fund, but they didn't really give any reason why. And later, another Chinese magistrate gave Hunter Biden a 3-carat diamond. He said that he knew it wasn't a good idea to take it, but that's exactly what he did. Other documents derived from Hunter Biden's abandoned laptop suggest that his associates were managing some of Joe Biden's finances and paying the vice president's utility and Delaware home bills out of his son's accounts. You know, there's been a report in the New York Times that pointed to a potential nexus between Joe Biden's diplomacy in Ukraine and Hunter Biden's lucrative role on the board of Burisma. Now, in 2017, Hunter requested that his father have his own key to the Washington, D.C. office of his company, Rosemont Seneca. Now, after his father won the presidency, you know, in 2020, Hunter reinvented himself as this artist, and he publicly addressed his substance abuse, trying to save some face, but questions around his business dealings, they have continued to persist from the Republican Party. The identities of these art patrons who pay six figures for his paintings, they remain unknown. Nobody knows who they are, and quite frankly, I can't imagine any of his art is worth six figures. I've seen it. I'm sorry, but I'm not impressed. The process for vetting these people who bought these paintings were conducted by Hunter Biden's own legal team, not the White House counsel, and it's opaque as hell. Joe Biden has said that there's an absolute wall between his policymaking and his family's business interests. But we, again, there's enough questionable behavior there to make people want to take a look. According to the New Yorker, there's an informal arrangement that was established that Biden wouldn't ask Hunter about his lobbying clients and Hunter wouldn't tell his father about them. But again, if you believe that's true, I got a bridge to sell you. Because what Joe Biden has not done to date, as of right now, is explicitly forbid any of his family members from taking money from people that are seeking an influence. And with all the hubbub, for all those of you that are excited that something is finally going to happen, remember this. No one in our modern history has been held accountable for their crimes. They've not been held accountable for their behavior or their treasonous actions. The laws that are on the books, they're meant to keep us little people like you and I in line, walking to the beat that they tell us to. And any dissension on our part, it's going to put us in jail real fast unless you're part of the minority community who has been self-marginalized since 2024. Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know where we're going to go. I don't know what we're going to do, but this whole narrative, this whole idea that we're going to see new business because we got a new party in power, they haven't even taken power, and here we are. We're already seeing business as usual. I'm not sure what's going to happen. I really don't believe that anything is going to happen, but I've been wrong before. Guys, stick around for our last break. We're going to cover one final thing.
What's that?
That's a swear jar. Every time someone swears, you put a quarter in it.
Who gets the money?
I don't know. We'll use it to buy something for the office, like a case of Bud Light or something.
F***ing awesome. F*** you, Bob.
F*** you, Jim.
Eric, I have a bag on line 3 for you.
Can I borrow your pen? Can I borrow your f***ing pen?
Will the owner of a white station wagon please go f*** herself?
We're going to go down there, and we're going to f*** some a***. We're going to f*** some a***. We're going to do whatever we have to, because we're going to f*** some a***.
Poop.
Doesn't count.
Shut the f*** up!
I am so proud of you mother suckers. Here, here.
Refreshingly smooth Bud Light. Always f***ing worth it.
You know, I've been covering it a lot on my shows these past couple weeks, especially since the midterms, that, you know, we really needed to seriously do a reset as a society. I don't care if you're a Republican voter. I don't care if you're a Democratic voter. You really need to take a look in the mirror, because the reality is we can never have a country that follows strictly Democratic principles or strictly Republican principles. Why? Because that'd be completely unfair for everyone. Yeah, one side would get everything they want and the other would be left in the dust with absolutely no voice. Does this sound familiar? Are you paying attention to what we've been seeing anytime any political party owns all three elements of our government? And the elements I'm talking about is House, Senate, and the executive office, not the judicial. But the key word that I'm referring to is compromise. You know, I'm not sure if that word exists yet in politics, but it should. I mean, both sides, they're going to keep on warring against each other unless there's something that puts them both at ease, if possible. My main point, however, is this. We need to listen to the other side. As a conservative, I follow a lot of conservative newscasts. I follow a lot of conservative speakers. I cover a lot of conservatives on social media, which, of course, it makes sense because I'm going to follow those who have the similar beliefs and thoughts that I do. Yet, if I only did that, I'd only be listening to one side in my own little echo chamber. However, doing these shows has kind of caused one of those things where I try to follow a good amount of liberal newspapers and sites as well. Even though I may disagree with about 90% of what they have to say, it is truly important that I'm informed, that I'm aware of how and what they think. I must understand the other side to understand the issues. When a person strictly sticks to one side and completely shuts out the other, a lot of frightening things, they start to happen. There's a term that I think loosely applies to this, and it's called groupthink. You know, the term was started by psychologist Irvin Janis, and it refers to a group of people who all have the same thoughts but start making decisions that have more to do with keeping conformity within a said group than making a rational moral decision. Again, let's reference the midterms. But when we open ourselves to what the other side has to say, liberal or conservative, we're not so closed off that we may be able to see a certain issue in a different light. There have been a lot of liberal-based articles where I've agreed with a point or two of what they had to say. Now, this doesn't make me unsure of where I stand. I know where my beliefs are, and I know where they're not going to change at all. I've read tons of articles about where my viewpoint was exactly the same before as it was after I read the article. And what listening to different opinion does is inform. And that's what I've been calling for a long time. You need to become an informed voter. Because I believe that uninformed people, they can be the most dangerous, along with those who completely shut out any opposing opinions. People who are going to just shout you down because you believe in something different. We don't have to agree with what the other side says, but I do believe that both parties have to listen to what the other side says. Otherwise, we're never going to find that middle ground. And that's what we're after. If you want to see this country change, regardless of what political aisle you're on, I challenge you. Read whatever news story that you read. What I want you to do is I want you to go, when you find an article that piques your interest, I want you to go type in the polar opposite coverage. So if you read a Fox News headline about the Republicans launching an investigation, go read a CNN headline or MSNBC or CBS or ABC or NPR. Go read them. Find out what the other side is saying. Because here's the thing. If you're going to argue a point, you can't just argue talking points, which is what we see a lot with the Democratic Party. They call you a racist, and that's the end of the debate. They don't want to. They stick to these name callings because they don't want to debate any issue. What's going to make you a better voter, what's going to make you a better person to understand what's going on in our country, is to take a knee, listen to what the other side is saying, because how in the world are you going to fight a war if you don't know what the enemy is doing? In the military, we call it tactics, techniques, and procedures. You study your enemy well. So if you consider the Republicans, or you consider the Democrats, or your liberals, or your conservatives, your Christians, or your atheists, if you truly want to understand and understand where they're coming from and how they got to that conclusion, listen to them and then formulate your arguments against their points. But all we're seeing right now in our political spectrum is just talking points being shared back and forth. And truly, they have always stayed the same. We talked about immigration on Wednesday night, and I said that, you know, we've had an immigration problem in our country for years and years. But the reality is, even when Republicans had complete control or the Democrats had complete control, nobody did anything. Why? Because they don't want to fix the issues. They just want to keep everybody stirred up and pissed off because they know voters are stupid. They're not going to take time to invest in their own education. They're not going to take time to invest in their own mindset. It's a bunch of groupthink. So, ladies and gentlemen, thank you so much. I appreciate you guys tuning in to this Friday episode 305, Politics and Crime, The Morons are Governing America. That's right, it's MAGA. Yeah, I appreciate you all tuning into this show because I truly try to seek to provide that middle ground analysis, but I also want to remain consistent to the inconvenient truth that so many people refuse to see. The world is a lot bigger than your political party, and we're seeing more and more people who have left the Republican Democratic Party, and now they identify as independents, which means toxic people like Joe Biden and toxic people like Donald Trump, Nancy Pelosi, Chuck Schumer, Mitch McConnell, McCarthy. They're all toxic, and independent voters are getting turned off by it. Maybe it's time, maybe sometime soon, maybe in this 2024 election, we will have a true independent on the presidential stage. I think that would actually be better for America than any of them. So until next time, friends, thank you so much for your service and your patriotism to this country. Without our men and women in uniform, our veteran community, and great Americans like yourself, our country would be a very, very different place. We all collectively are the only ones who stand between freedom and chaos, and it's time that we start paying attention, look at what's going on, and start calling everybody out. But in despair, ladies and gentlemen, I'll finish up this Friday of telling you, don't let your dog tags dangle in the dirt. Stay on your feet and continue to fight that good fight against everything that's wrong. If you love your freedom, think a veteran. If you love your peace, think a police officer. And if you see a first responder, give them a high-five handshake. Tell them job well done, because, again, all of these people are out there doing jobs that are very forgetful but easily mocked. Guys, thank you so much for joining me. Catch me every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday at 5 o'clock p.m. Central Standard Time right here. Until next time, friends, I will catch you Monday as we step into a new show. Get off social media. Get off the news. Get off all that stuff, friends, and spend time with the ones you love most, because seems like, you know, we don't really ever know when our day is up. So make the most of what we have. Guys, my name is Philip Blackman. I'm out of here.